Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, reporting live from the outskirts of Washington, D.C., in my hometown of Alexandria, Virginia. There was a lot of news over the past couple of weeks. I was not here for July 4th, neither were you, so we've missed a few things. Was here last week. But the main thing in the news is the president being racist. I guess it's good in the news since it's not unusual. This is a man who has built his life's career on racism. In fact, even before he was known to anyone, he was going around saying that five African-American youths who were falsely accused of rape in the Central Park be put to death. Continued it in his campaign, we all know, saying that Mexico was sending its rapists here and most of them were criminals, although some, he assumes, were good people. Every single Mexican he ever met was a criminal, but he assumes there must be some in every 1,000 Mexicans. Maybe one of them is not a rapist. Then, of course, Judge Curiel, the judge that he said couldn't be fair to Trump because he was Latino, and since Trump is racist, how can he expect fair treatment from a Latino judge? Judge turns out to have been too fair to him. Moving on to, of course, telling African-American players in the NFL that they could not stand up against police violence in the African-American communities. I mean, the list goes on and on and on and on and on. And I could go on and on and on and on. But the racism is only half the story. The other half of the story, the one that got very little press, also happened this week, actually just happened yesterday. The United States House of Representatives, for the first time in more than a decade, increased the minimum wage. Increased the minimum wage to $15 an hour, more than doubling the current minimum wage of $7.25. Virtually every Democrat voted for that. Virtually every Republican voted against it. Did you catch that in the news? I hope so. A lot of the focus was on Donald Trump's tweets. You see, there is a battle going on for the hearts and the minds of poor white Americans. While the Republicans are trying desperately to impoverish them by helping big corporations cheat them, by removing all kinds of regulation with consumer protection, by helping big pharma, big pharmaceutical companies spread the opioid crisis. Remember, a poor kid caught with marijuana can go to jail for a long time, but a rich pharmaceutical corporation caught with selling 90 billion pills to people who don't need them and causing tens of thousands of needless deaths, not as big a deal. So while the Republicans are helping pharmaceutical corporations create addicts and death, while they're helping the gun manufacturers put all kinds of military and military-style weapons in our streets, which also leads to gunning down people, while they're helping national corporations pollute our waters and our rivers and international corporations avoid taxes, while at the same time fighting against labor rights, making sure that workers are mistreated, and making sure that the minimum wage is kept way below where it was 50 years ago when adjusted for inflation, as America is creating its first generation, really in American history, where the kids are doing worse than their parents. There's nothing Republicans want to focus on more, I think, than racism. You see, there is a battle for the heart and minds of poor white people. If Republicans are busy making them poorer, and don't get me wrong, of course they're busy making black and brown people poorer as well, but the affinities, the allegiances of black and brown people are not in question. They support the Democratic Party. But as Trump and his team are working hard to make white people poorer, along with brown and black people, the question is, where will those poor white people go? Will they support Republicans? Will they support Democrats? If they solely look at their economic issues, solely look at the fact that their health care costs are increasing, solely look at the fact that their environment is getting worse, or that their kids can't afford college anymore, or that they just can't survive on a minimum wage, if they focus on the economy and recognize that we have more income inequality than any time since 1929, that yes, rich people are getting much, much richer, but that 90, 95% that aren't at the very top are getting poorer. They can focus on that, or they can focus on racism. And so when Donald Trump says, send them back to the countries they came from, a four American congresswoman of color, three of whom were born in the United States, and whole crowds are chanting, send them back, in a really open display of the racial animus that's usually a dog whistle for Republicans. Usually it's not so open. This is a play for the heart and minds of poor white people. I've said it often on this show. I think it always bears repeating what Lyndon Johnson said in 1960 of poor white people. He said, if you tell the lowest white man that he's better than the best colored man, he won't notice you're picking his pocket. Hell, give him someone to look down on, and he'll empty his pockets for you. That was a truth 60 years ago that I think is still true today. But for the poor white racists, they do have a problem. You can't eat racism. It doesn't sustain your family. And while the hate may give you an adrenaline rush, it really doesn't give you much energy. Doesn't help your kids in college. Doesn't help you increase your wages. No, it just makes you angry and increases your hate. And it may make you feel better about yourself, but only in a sense of schadenfreude, in a sense of taking pleasure in other people's pain. If you look at yourself with regard to your parents or your town or the manufacturing base in your rural city or the fact that the opioid crisis has increased so that your children don't want to live there anymore, if you look at the broken families in rural America, it doesn't look very good. But if you can attack the immigrant, attack the African American, attack the gay people, attack women, those horrible women who won't have sex with the incels, the involuntarily celibate white nationalist men, if you only look at hate, well, you might feel a little better. At least that's what Lyndon Johnson is teaching. But you can't eat racism. Racism puts no food on the table. Racism doesn't increase your wages, doesn't help your kids get an education, doesn't provide you with health care. Grandma still can't afford her pills. And for all we know, grandma is hooked on those other pills those pharmaceutical companies are selling. You still can't drink the water in Flint. So the question is, when will rural white America realize you can't eat racism? That even though Donald Trump is appealing to our basest motives, these motives don't help you any. It's fascinating, of course, to watch the Republican Party as it does not distance itself from Donald Trump's racism. I guess we shouldn't be surprised. Lindsey Graham, who once called Donald Trump openly a racist, is now his water boy. After all, if Donald Trump is Putin's puppet, I guess Lindsey Graham is Trump's puppet. Where are we going here? Have we noticed that the world is watching? That the British newspapers every day report on the rise in America and worldwide racism and ethnic hatred and religious hatred and anti-gay hatred and misogyny and most of all anti-immigrant hatred? Have we noticed that this is a worldwide movement? Have we noticed that history is being written? During the McCarthy era, I'm sure most people in the 1950s didn't really think about the history being written. Joe McCarthy knew he had no proof of communists in the national government, but it was an election year. and he needed something more exciting than the St. Lawrence Seaway. Donald Trump knows he can use racism to build his base, and he knows he doesn't have the left of America, he doesn't have the middle of America, he doesn't have intelligent Republicans, he doesn't have thoughtful Republicans. They've left the Republican Party. People like George Will, for example, are never Trumpers. He can only rely on the most ignorant, the most base, the most racist, and frankly, the most gullible Americans there are. So it's a battle to go low. Will he win? Do we realize history's being written? What do people think now about the angry faces in the 1960s, those contorted white faces of teenagers screaming at the 8-year-old black girl trying to get an education in their school? I've seen the New York Times pieces of the woman 50, 60 years later begging forgiveness, saying it's hard to believe that she was that teenager, her face contorted with rage. I know that after Richard Nixon won in the landslide 3 years later, very few people would admit having voted for him. I know that few would support McCarthy now. I know there are Germans who say, yeah, we didn't realize the Nazis were that bad. BS. Poppycock, since I can't say the other word on air. We knew. Don't let anyone tell you they didn't know about Donald Trump. Don't let anyone tell you they didn't know that innocent children were being put in cages without so much as a mattress, a dirty mattress on the floor to sleep on. Little children put in concrete cages, inadequately fed, fed with microwave burritos and sugar sweet food, drinks, and not allowed access to a toothbrush or a shower, not allowed access to darkness at night. Crowded in cells with other crying children, separated from their parents. This is history. This will be in our history books. Children 10 years, 20 years, 50, 100 years from now will study the Trump era. They will wonder about us. They will feel superior to us, much as we might feel superior to the segregationists of 60 years ago, or to people in the 1930s who allowed the Holocaust to happen. Do Trumpists realize that they're going to be a page in history? You can't eat racism. Maybe it's time they focus on economic well-being for all Americans instead. This is Mark Levine. If you want to call in, it's 888-48-MARK, 888-48-6275. You can also comment on Facebook. We'll be right back right after this.
Never confuse Mark Levine with right-winger Mark Levin. The second E stands for empathy, which the other Mark lacks. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. When conservatives attack, Mark Levine is ready, Constitution in hand. And here's our favorite lawyer now.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. When Donald Trump told four members of Congress elected in Minnesota, Massachusetts, Michigan, and Indiana to go back to where they came from, only one of them actually was born outside the United States. Three of them were born in the United States. I'm not sure where they're supposed to go back to, the home communities that elected them. The fourth, of course, was a Somali refugee, Omar, and she became a naturalized American citizen. Now, I don't agree with a lot of what Ilhan Omar and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez have to say. I don't agree with everything they have to say. I consider myself a good progressive liberal Democrat, and I think some of the things they say border on leftist things. Some things I agree with, some things I don't. It's perfectly fine to criticize what someone says. It's not what Donald Trump did here. He criticized who they are. He doesn't judge them by the content of their character. He judged them by the color of their skin. And when an angry mob at one of his rallies shouted, "Send her back." Donald Trump did nothing to stop him. Let's play that clip.
Sorry, Mark, we're going to have to do that in the next break. We're having a issue with
it. The clip is not ready yet. No problem. What we'll find after the break is we'll find that where Donald Trump was asked about the chance of send her back, he claimed to have tamped them down.
Sorry, okay, we have it.
Actually, let's play it.
Hey, Mr. President, if I may, when your supporters last night were chanting send her back, why didn't you stop them? Why didn't you ask them to stop saying that?
Well, number one, I think I did. I started speaking very quickly. It really was a loud, I disagree with it, by the way, but it was quite a chant. And I felt a little bit badly about it, but I will say this, I did, and I started speaking very quickly, but it started up rather fast, as you probably noticed.
So you'll tell your supporters never to say that again?
I would say that. I was not happy with it. I disagree with it. But again, I didn't say that. They did. But I disagree with it.
But they were echoing what you said in your first tweet, that they should go back.
Well, I don't think if you examine it, I don't think you'll find that. But I disagree with it.
And, Mr. President, are you concerned that your supporters chanting, send her back, Representative Omar or the other representatives in
Well, I have tremendous support, and I wasn't happy with that message that they gave last night, but that was a packed arena. We could have sold an arena. We could have sold 10 of those arenas last night. There were tremendous numbers of people that couldn't get in. We had outside thousands and thousands of people, and we had thousands and thousands of people that wanted to come, and we said, please don't come. It held 10,000 people. It was packed. We could have sold that arena 10 times. There's tremendous support for the Republican Party. There's tremendous support.
All right. I want to play for you. We may have to wait till we get back. But I want to play for you the actual clip of his rally, where you'll find he did nothing to stop the chant. I don't know if we have that yet. Here we are.
And obviously and importantly, Omar has a history of launching vicious anti-Semitic screeds.
Yeah, sure doesn't sound like the president spent any time stopping his crowd. Think about what "send her back" means. What you're saying is that every naturalized American citizen, every immigrant, is not an American. You're saying if they're of brown skin, they don't belong here. And Mitch McConnell would claim this wasn't racist? It's obviously racist. And in fact, that's the point, isn't it? 888-48-MARK, 888-48-6275, back after this.
And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I am your host, Mark Levine. The United States House of Representatives has condemned the president's racism. Every single Democrat in the House, in the majority party, concluded that the president was being racist. Only four Republicans and new independent Justin Amash concluded the same. Why do Republicans see this so differently? Because Republicans see this differently. In other words, the elected officials are following their own constituents. Republicans don't see racism because, well, I think you need to ask them. I think you need to ask them. Generally, they shrug their shoulders and just say it's not there. It's not there. Maybe if you chanted the N-word and wore a white hood and burned a cross, maybe they'd see it. But telling American citizens of color they had to go back where they came from is actually a very old meme in American history. This is a theme we see time and time again. In fact, we saw it against white people in the 19th century. In the 1840s, when the Germans and the Irish came to the shores, the Americans, largely English descendants, a few French, mostly English, were telling them to go back to where they came from. Then at the turn of the 20th century, the Italians came, the Jews came, again told to go back where they came from, this time by not just the English Americans, but by the German and Irish Americans, who by the 1890s, 50 years later, had gone from rejected refugees to fully accepted members of American society. Turn the wheel 50 years later, Italians are accepted, Chinese are not. 50 years later, it's Latinos that are not accepted, despite the fact that, frankly, that many of them are descendants of the Native Americans who were here before the first white English settlers came. Remember, half our country used to be part of Mexico. I mean, particularly when you include became the Louisiana Purchase, and then California, New Mexico. These people were here before our ancestors were. The people coming here from Guatemala and El Salvador are largely descendants of the indigenous peoples who were in this country first. Not that it matters. Because at the end of the day, America is not supposed to be based on an ethnicity or a nationality or a language or a religion. America is not some English colony. We're the United States of America. We are an independent nation. We proudly accept immigrants from all over the planet. In fact, the largest plurality of American citizens actually come from the German countries. And that plurality, about 20%. English is second. So the majority of Americans aren't even in our largest ethnic groups. We are the world. We are African and Asian. We are Central American. We are Australian. We are European. We are Christian and Protestant and Catholic and Muslim and Jewish and Buddhist and Hindu. We are white and black and brown and red-headed and black-haired and black-skinned, everything in between. Now, the genius of America is that our Declaration of Independence doesn't mention a particular language. It's written in English. It doesn't deify English. It doesn't mention a religion. It doesn't mention an ethnicity. We hold these truths to be self-evident, Thomas Jefferson wrote, that all men are created equal. Later on, we would include women in that declaration. And even though Thomas Jefferson had slaves, his stirring words, all men are created equal, that's our foundation. Just because Jefferson was a hypocrite doesn't mean that his words still aren't stirring, still aren't correct. We the people, the United States Constitution begins. It doesn't distinguish black or white. It doesn't distinguish based on religion or ethnicity. It doesn't distinguish between men and women. We the people of the United States of America, in order to form a more perfect union, read the preamble, to establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and ensure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, our children, to ordain and establish this Constitution. None of it mentions a religion, a race, a location, an ethnicity. Truly, we are the one country on the planet that isn't based on any of that. And I would argue that is our strength. That is the reason why we have the strongest economy on earth. That is the reason why we have the creativity that only comes when the greatest minds come together from all over the planet. There may be a Japanese way of thinking or an Australian way of thinking. There may well be a Swahili way of thinking, a Russian way, a Guatemalan way. But when you put all those people in the room together, what will they come up with is pretty damn amazing. In culture, in business, in great ideas, in science. It seems that when you think outside the box, you actually go further. And what better way to think outside the box than to have different people coming from different boxes to be here, to be part of America? I think even Republicans realize that immigration makes us strong. They want to distinguish. They want to say we like white immigrants. We don't like black immigrants. You know, the Jewish immigrants from Germany were largely the ones that helped us build the nuclear bomb. You may not like the nuclear bomb, but if they hadn't been building it for us, maybe they would have built them for Germany. You know, the people that come here swear an allegiance to the United States of America. And the vast majority of the time, 99.999999% of the time, immigrants are loyal because we are the country that took them in. We are the country that didn't mistreat them. We're the country that had them escape persecution. You know what's on the base of the Statue of Liberty. Give me your tired, your poor, huddled masses yearning to breathe free. So when we mistreat immigrants, when we take children away from their parents, cruelly depriving them of their own identity, it's not just the parents. It's these children who maybe do not even know their names, forcibly separated from the ones who gave them birth, the ones who gave them love, ripping a child from a mother's arms. These are things that America didn't even do when we wrongfully and racistly put Japanese Americans in internment camps in World War II. And in those internment camps, horrible though that was, and of course, we've even paid reparations to the descendants of Japanese Americans forcibly interned. They had beds. People could sleep without the light on. They had better food than we're providing. They had access to toothbrushes, access to showers. It was not an easy existence. It was not a good existence. What we're doing now is worse. If you're a child and you're imprisoned with your parent, at least you have your parent, scared, but doing their best to put on a brave face for you. But if you're 6 or 7 years old, put in a room of crying children, trying to change the diapers of a 2-year-old, trying to console a 3-year-old, and you're 6, and you don't know where your parents are, and you don't know if you'll ever see them again. Are these the cruelties that the Trumpists want? Is this what they celebrate? Are Trumpists sadists? They just take joy in mistreating others? Or are their lives so fraught with self-loathing that they just can only find joy in making others miserable? We talked about that last week. Whatever it is, the Democrats are going to continue to improve the economic well-being of all Americans, particularly those who are struggling, whether they be white or black, to raise the minimum wage for native and born citizens and for immigrants. And I think the poor white folk in America who so support Donald Trump might just prefer the health care and the minimum wage and the workers' rights and the clean water and clean air that Democrats provide. You can't eat racism. Let's go to the phones. I've got old faithful Michael on line one from the Bronx. Hey, Michael, how are you?
Hey, Mark. Beautiful presentation that you gave. But we also need to add to it the criminality that's involved here, particularly what happened yesterday. And I'm going on the legal aspect of this, and you being a lawyer will know what I'm talking about and how criminal this is. Number one, I don't know if you recall the EEO laws that strictly state that you cannot engage in any kind of workplace harassment when you are targeting people of color or harassing based on race, gender, anything that will make
hostile work environment.
Working environment.
I tell you, Michael, you point out the sexual harassment laws, and we have a president who has now been accused of 22 separate acts of sexual assault, and he's really not even barely denying it anymore. There was an NBC news from 1992, a grainy video that came out that showed him grabbing women by the waist, forcibly kissing them when they clearly don't want to be kissed, and he's laughing, and they don't think it's funny. And he's doing this while cavorting with Epstein, the wonderful Hollywood child pedophilia racket, the guy who would rape little girls, young girls, who, you know, the labor secretary helped get him off because he was rich. This is Donald Trump's land. And, you know, I don't think most Trumpists would want their daughters to be alone with a lech like Donald Trump. And yet, if they can just get a little dose of racism, a little dose of send her back, I guess they feel better about themselves. Your thoughts?
Idea of this send her back thing, you hear the tone of these people's voices, and it's becoming somewhat violent as well. And every time Trump opens his mouth in that kind of tone with that rhetoric, it incites the violence, and something always happens physically to the people that he has targeted. We remember Charlottesville. We remember in South Carolina with Dylann Roof. We remember the guy that was sending the pipe bombs to the
Democrats. The one with the van and all the pictures of Donald Trump on the wall. And we also remember that Donald Trump famously said, I'll pay your legal bills if you beat somebody up.
Take care of all your legal
bills. So the question is, will there be a moment where the Trumpists finally say, enough is enough, I don't support violence, I don't support racism, even if it's just self-interest? Well, the farmers say, hey, wait a minute, putting tariffs on our goods makes us worse off, not better off. I keep waiting for the turn, and it keeps never coming. There was a conservative radio host by the name of Joel Walsh, former congressman, who said, now this is it. This is it. He's a right-wing conservative. He's a Tea Party guy. But he said, now when Donald Trump's been openly racist with these four members of Congress, this is the point where the American people will turn. And I wish it were true, but I don't believe it is true, because he's tapping into a racism and white nationalism that is stronger and older and deeper than anything Donald Trump caused. And by tapping into that long well of racism, that deep well of racism, the question is not, will it go away? The question is whether the majority of Americans will rise up in 2019 in Virginia and 2020 in the United States to say, enough is enough. I do not believe his base will desert him. The question is, will enough Americans fight to preserve our country and our democracy and our very nature as a country of immigrants that welcomes the diversity of all? Thank you for your call, Michael. I appreciate it. We're going to take one last break. If you want to call in, it's 888-48-MARK. 888-488-6275. We'll be right back right after this.
Schooling the GOP, one hand tied behind his back, the Constitution in the other. It's Mark Levin. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levin.
Welcome back to Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levin. Looking into the point that Michael from the Bronx made, he mentioned EEOC, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission rulings based on Title VII of the Civil Rights Act. And they've ruled consistently that the things that Donald Trump has said, go back to where you came from, are a hostile work environment, and the kind of thing that, were you a private employer, would get you paying a pretty large sum. Let me give you some examples. In 2012, a California hospital settled a lawsuit for $1 million when Filipino Americans were told to go back to the Philippines. A Nevada U-Haul company sued in 2006 after Hispanic workers were told back to Mexico, settled the case for $153,000. A car dealership sued in 2004 by a Muslim immigrant from India who was told by his co-workers to just go back to where he came from. He had to make annual compliance reports, apologize, and pay $13,500 in damages to this one employee. In 2011, New York University settled a lawsuit for $210,000 after an African employee called Monkey and was told to go back to the jungle. California restaurant paid $165,000 to a dining room manager who was told, go back to your country. The list just goes on and on and on and on. You can't do that. You have free speech in America, but you cannot create a hostile work environment. When you're in a position of power, you can't be telling your employees, go back where you came from. Now, this is important. You can fire someone for being a bad worker. You can fire someone for using foul language. You actually can't be sued for using foul language. You can be sued for sexually harassing someone, coming on to someone repeatedly, and you can be fired for using extremely racist language to create this hostile work environment. What Donald Trump did, bragged about, cheered to his supporters, who also shouted things like, send her back, is the exact kind of thing that's actionable under U.S. law. You see, we were changing as a country. We were becoming a more perfect union. We were becoming a country that, if it didn't respect the diversity of America, at least employers recognized that they couldn't intentionally be racist. So when Republicans say, oh, Donald Trump, he's not being racist, who are they lying to? Are they lying to themselves or their constituents or both? Do they not get it or do they not want to get it? Part of the Republican ploy here is to take four, frankly, non-representative members of the Democratic Party and highlight them. And when I say non-representative, I'm not basing it on their color or their immigrant status. There are lots of members of Congress on the Democratic side, lots of women, lots of people of color, lots of people from all over the globe. There are some Native American women for the first time serving in the United States Congress. No one's talking about them. No, Donald Trump is focused on their ethnicity. Republicans would be smart not to focus on that, to try to pretend that AOC or Ilhan Omar, that their ideas are the center of the Democratic Party rather than way out on a limb. Their ideas are on a limb. I'll criticize many of their ideas. But I'm not going to criticize someone for who they are. That, my friends, is un-American. It's the very antithesis of what America is all about. Country where we welcome people from all over the world to make America great. Indeed, it's why America was great long before Donald Trump put on his stupid red hat. This is Mark Levine, signing off.